Welcome. Thank you guys for coming. Tonight, we're going to talk about V'tein Tal U'matar Livracha. And it's a pretty small group, so I'll try to consider this like a chabura. We'll learn it together, hopefully raise questions as we go through the Makorot. Basically, I want to divide this into a few parts. We'll start, I think even before I lay out the outline of the shiur, let's really just jump into section number one. I called it the foundational sources for davening for rain. There's a Mishnah followed by a Gemara in Masechet Tanit. This appears on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Mishnah states, Bishlosha b'mar cheshvan shoalin et ha-gishamim. On the third of Cheshvan, we start asking for rain. We know that asking for rain is V'tein Tal U'matar Livracha, which we include in the bracha of Barech Aleinu. That's the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, B'shiva Bo. We start on the seventh of Mar Cheshvan. Chamisha Asra Yom Achar Chag. He justifies his opinion. It's 15 days after Chag, after Shmini Atzeret. Kidei Sheyagia Acharon Shebi Yisrael L'Nahar Prat. So that people who live as far away as the Euphrates, communities in Bavel, can get back home without getting rained on, right? We think tefillah is something real. When we daven for rain, we think it might actually rain. And we don't want people to, you know, they didn't have cement roads back then, they didn't have cars, get their wagons stuck in the mud, get other travel issues. So that's when they start davening. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Halacha Kerabban Gamliel. Halacha follows Rabban Gamliel. But Tanya says the Braita Chananya Omer Uvagola ad shishim bitkufa, until 60 days bitkufa. Let's leave that a little bit ambiguous for now. Amar Rav Huna Bar Chiya Amar Shmuel Halacha keChananya, and says Rav Huna Bar Chiya in the name of Shmuel, the halacha follows Chananya. And I brought the source in Malachim, which just shows that Eliyahu Hanavi uses the phrase Tal U'matar, which probably is the biblical source for the tefillah of V'tein Tal U'matar. So this Gemara is the foundational source for saying V'tein Tal U'matar Livracha. On the one hand, it is pretty simple. It winds up telling you that there's the community not in the Gola, that being Israel, which starts on the 7th of Cheshvan. And we know from the Mishnah and Gemara spelled out elsewhere that we stop saying it on Pesach. So pretty easy in Israel, and then Uva Gola. So that's question number one. What exactly does Gola mean? Now, I'm not trying to overcomplicate it. I think legitimately it is a question, right? On the one hand, it could mean the exile. That could be everywhere that's not Israel. Or, and this is clear from various Gemara that appear in different places, Gola sometimes means Bavel specifically, as opposed to other places where Jews, especially over the centuries, wound up. And the second point is, what exactly is Shishim Bitkufa? Now, this is not so ambiguous, but maybe Tosfos is, so I want to walk through that with you. And in this Chabura, I want to make step number one, which I call section two on this source sheet, the basics of the Jewish calendar and the Tekufos. I want to just go through a basic introduction of what exactly, how the Jewish calendar works, what these things called the Tekufos are. There are four of them. And that will help us understand what exactly Shishim Bitkufa means. Once we have an understanding of that, I want to turn to the Gemara, the Gemara's halachic discussion that it begins and running all the way through the Rishonim and Achronim on V'tein Tal U'matar specifically, and the question of when to say it in Bavel and beyond. And I want to conclude with a small discussion on the discussion is, it basically follows the classical commentators. You know, you have Rashi chiming in on the discussion, Rambam, there's an interesting contradiction in the Rambam that we'll see going all the way through the Rosh and Shulchan Aruch. And then it seems like, okay, the discussion's over, and then Jews move to the southern hemisphere and it starts all over again. So we're going to conclude with that. Any questions about that? All right, so let's jump right into it. So the Gemara, I didn't include it on this sheet itself, but the Gemara winds up saying that Shishim Bitzkufa means 60 days after the Tzkufa, which is the day of the Tzkufa is day number one, so 59 days later, and there's Machloket Rav and Shmuel, but the 60th day from the Tzkufa is when we begin saying B'tein Tal U'matar. Okay, so what's all this business? So to start all the way at the beginning, And also feel free to stop me if this is like super obvious to you guys, but there are essentially two different types of calendars for how we track time. There are lunar calendars, the word lunar coming from the moon, track the moon. We count a new month every time that the moon appears in the sky, more or less. And that could work in the way that it did during the times of the Beit HaMikdash, or when there was a Sanhedrin even after the Mikdash, where witnesses come to Beit Din and say, we just saw a new moon, it's time to declare a new month. Or it could be like we have today, which started in the 4th century CE, roughly after the time of Rav and Abaye, that we have a pre-calculated calendar that perpetuates on its own, but it fundamentally, except for when it doesn't, follows the moon. We say, we daven tefillat Rosh Chodesh when the new moon appears in the sky. That's more or less what it's tracking. And then there are solar calendars. Solar calendars follow the sun. The sun reappears in the sky, from our perspective, roughly every 365 days. So how long is... Now, the reason why those can't be the same thing is that astronomically, the moon reappears, and there's a technical difference between the sidereal length of the month and the synodic length of the month. The one that Chazal care about is, from our perspective, essentially, when the moon has the same exact shape, either being, let's say, completely black or completely full. That happens every 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 chalakim, or 44 minutes and 3-ish seconds, which is accurate, right? Chalak is 3 and a third seconds, so even if you ask a NASA scientist today, that's actually accurate within a chalak. It's about half a second off of what you'll see on Wikipedia today. So 29 and a half, let's just round, times 12 is, how many days? 354. And that's not 365. So between a lunar year and a solar year, there's a difference of 11 days. So that problem adds up pretty quickly. And that happens, for example, in the Muslim calendar. The Muslim calendar is a purely lunar calendar. We see that their holidays from one year to the next are always 11 days earlier on the solar cycle. The month of Ramadan, when they fast, right now, I believe, is receding from the summer back into the spring and then into the winter, which is great for them because it's a time when they fast during sunlight hours. A Muslim who was born on the same day as you will, after 30-some years, be a year older than you because he has experienced more lunar years than you have solar or lunisolar years. Okay. And then there are purely solar calendars. So, what is an example of a solar calendar? We count to a solar calendar in the secular world. We say the year is 2023. That calendar, somewhat counterintuitively, actually didn't begin in the year zero. It began in the year, what we would call January 1st, 45 BCE. It's called Julian after Julius Caesar, who I don't think some smart mathematician who probably was around at that time, wrote it up, and it replaced what was the Roman calendar at the time, and it was exactly 365 and a quarter days. 30 days has September, April, June, and November, all the rest have 31, except February, which has 28, and every 4 years it has 29. Zehu, full stop. That comes out to 365 days every year, except for every fourth year when it's 366 days. So that is a very simple calendar, but it's not fully accurate. Because in reality, a solar year is not exactly 365.25 days. We call it the mean tropical year, right? Similar to the synodic month, right? The sun, and we see this on our sheet, by the way. From our perspective, during the summer, the sun goes further north in the sky. As we approach winter, it goes further and further south in the sky. So from the sun appearing in the same place in the sky for any given locale, that takes 365 days, 5 hours, 48 minutes, and 45 seconds. So the difference between the Julian calendar and that might not seem so significant, but it actually wound up being a problem. So before it wound up being a problem, Chazal essentially created their own lunisolar calendar and accepted the Julian calendar to the extent that they had to. So, just to start with the lunisolar calendar, right? Tishrei Cheshvan all the way through Elul, that's lunisolar. It's a system of every 19 years having 12 regular years of 12 lunar months, and every 7 years adding another month. And that actually works out to have 235 lunar months over 19 years. And comparing that to 19 solar years is only a differential of 2 hours. So it's actually an extremely good way to keep solar and lunar in track. So for basically everything in Jewish practice, the lunisolar calendar is really, really good. It's trailing off by 2 hours every 19 years, which means it takes about 218 years, by my calculation, for the Jewish calendar to trail one day ahead. In theory, right, if you look in Rambam, why do we even care that the Jewish calendar be solar? It's so that Pesach doesn't fall in the winter. So it's not even that much of a problem. Right now, Pesach is in the spring. Every several hundred years, it's drifting slightly forward by a day. Eventually, it'll take place in the late spring and eventually in the summer. It's going to be a long, long, long time before that happens, though. But we don't follow the lunisolar calendar for everything.
So 1 second. So yeah. Do we anticipate moving it back, or it hasn't been?
It hasn't been an issue yet. Right now, let's say the Jewish calendar was instituted some 1,700 years ago. So let's say we're roughly, 8 days ahead of where we'd want to be. So it's not,
right.
It's not that bad.
A couple more millennia to go, I
guess. Yeah, and if a season is 91-ish days, so doing pretty good for now. It's still in early spring. And, it obviously varies, depending on the year of the 19-year cycle. So the Gemara spells it out. Now, the solar calendar for Jewish thought, for Jewish halacha, is relevant for three things. One, I'm sure, is obvious because you're all sitting here today. V'dein telematzer levracha. V'dein telematzer levracha has to do purely with a solar calendar calculation. And that's what the tekufa has to do with. The second thing is something much rarer called Birkat HaChama, which follows the same exact calendar. It's a bracha that is mentioned in the ninth parak of bracha, which we say every 28 years, when, according to the Julian calendar, or Shmuel's calendar, as we're about to see inside, the sun appears in the sky on Tuesday night, which is Wednesday, the fourth day of creation, at 6 p.m. There's actually a third area that the solar calendar is relevant. There's a Rama in Yoredeya who mentions that at the moment of the Tekufa, which is when a new season begins, there's a strong minhag not to drink water. Okay. My sense is that l'halacha, we don't necessarily follow that, but so, for all intents and purposes, it's essentially just v'tein telematzer levracha. Okay. Hope that wasn't too long. Any questions on that? On the one hand, I bring it up to clarify things, not to just confuse everyone. On the other hand, if you are confused, happy to backtrack on any of that, because the background is important. Okay. Shmuel says in this Gemara in Erevin, I'll just brush over how exactly we get to this in the discussion of Erevin. But Amar Shmuel says, Ein tekufat Nisan nofelet ele ba'arba'a revi'ei hayom, o bitzchilat hayom, o bitzchilat halayla, o b'chatzi hayom, o b'chatzi halayla. So Shmuel says that tekufat Nisan, the moment, so what season starts in the month of Nisan? The spring. He says that the spring season begins on at one of four specific times during the day. So let's say tchilat hayom, we could call 6 a.m., tchilat halayla, 6 p.m., or 12 o'clock noon, or 12 o'clock midnight. And he goes on for each tekufa. So we see that, and then just to conclude, at the end of this mekor, he says, ve'ein bein tekufa l'tekufa, right? So between the moment, so we see that a tekufa is essentially the moment that a new season begins, and I'll explain on the chart what that is. So how long is between each tekufa and tekufa? Tishim ve'echad yom v'sheva sha'ot u'mechza. 91 days and 7.5 hours. Right, so that makes sense. 91 days times 4 is 364 days. 7.5 hours times 4 is 30 hours. So that's 365 days and a quarter. So we're essentially taking 365 days and a quarter of the Julian calendar and dividing it by 4. And he's saying that the four seasons are that long. Right, so Shmuel himself, we know, knew that this was a simplification, because we have Rav Ada, who was more or less a contemporary, who had his own calendar. I don't think it is explicitly mentioned in the Gemara, but Rishonim talk about his calendar, which was closer to the true 365.24-ish calendar length. The thing that Shmuel likely didn't know is what Kepler in the 1600s showed, or late 1500s, that actually the four seasons themselves aren't all the same length, and that has to do with complicated astronomy, which we could skip over for now.
Did Rivera's calendar have?
I don't think so.
I don't.
I think his calendar also assumes that the four seasons were the same length.
Okay.
I think everyone assumes that until Kepler, physics. Right, but if we look on page one, right, so what exactly is going on astronomically? So the sun, we assume is somewhat in place. Doesn't really matter whether or not that's 100% true, but the Earth rotates around the sun, and the Earth is on a tilt with, I forget exactly how many degrees, but that tilt is what affects seasons, because when the Earth is at the two close points on the elliptical plane relative to the sun, it's at those moments that the northern and southern hemispheres receive the same amount of light. So on its way around the sun in one direction, you have a moment of autumn. Well, let's start with spring. You have a moment of spring, and the northern and southern hemispheres have the same length, day and night, if you're at the same latitude, positive or negative. And then as we start moving towards the further end of the ellipse, we're approaching summer, and in the northern hemispheres, the days are getting longer and longer, days being longer than nights, and in the southern hemisphere, the opposite. And then we hit roughly, and we could, turn to the next, we could turn to page two. This is spelled out in the chart, right? We hit something like June 21st, June 22nd, and that's the moment of the equinox, or we would call it Tekufa Tammuz, and summer has begun. Days are still longer than night, but they're getting shorter in the northern hemisphere. And then we hit something like September 23rd, and now we're in Tekufa Tishrei. Tekufa Tishrei is when autumn begins. That's when, at that moment, the hemispheres are the same, but now night is longer than day in the northern hemisphere until we get to Tekufat Tevet, and that is when winter begins, and at that Tekufat Tevet is the longest evening of the year, so the days are getting longer, but night is still very short. Okay, so we've figured it out. Tekufat Tishrei is September 23rd. That is what the Tekufa is. So when the Gemara that we started off with says, we say Shishim B'Tekufa, we start saying Methein Talumatar 59 days after September 23rd. Okay, good, end of Shir. Except it's not. So if anyone wants to do quickly and you said, what's 59 days after September 23rd? It's something like November 21st, 22nd. So that's why we have another chart on this page before we get to the next section. The Beit Yosef at the top of this page writes in the name of the Avudraham that V'hayom Samech, the 60th day of the Tekufa, Yavo Bechavbet bin Novembre, Im Haya Oto February, Mikavchet Yom. Right? If February the next year, if February of the upcoming year has 28 days, then the Tekufa will be on the 22nd of November. Aval Im Haya February, Mikavchet Yom. If the upcoming February has 29 days, Tihia Hashe'ela Bechavbet Novembre. Then V'tein Talamatar will wind up on the 23rd of November. Now note that the Beit Yosef lived in the 1500s, died in 1570-something, so it was actually very shortly after his lifetime that everything changed. So he actually wasn't wrong for what was at the time. It was actually the calendar that was wrong. So you remember that I said that the Julian/Shmuel calendar assumes a solar year, a tropical year, is 365.25 days. They knew that that was actually about 11 minutes too long. They just, they said, okay, like, it's for the convenience sake. But that actually wound up leading to a very big discrepancy. So the discrepancy essentially ran from 325 of the Common Era, during which year there was something called the First Council of Nicaea, where a bunch of bishops gathered in a city near Istanbul and Constantinople at the time in Turkey. Might have been, I don't know what it was called at the time, might have been pre-Constantinople. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. That's what it was called. It's a city called Nicaea. They decided on a bunch of things, but they said, we want March 21st to be the date of the spring equinox, and that'll help us decide when Easter is. I think it was somewhat polemical. They wanted it to be different from Pesach. The problem is, the Julian calendar falls a little bit ahead. So falling 11 minutes too long each year is about one day forward of a shift every 128 years, Now, fast forward to the year 1582 CE, some 1,257 years later, during the time of Pope Gregory XIII, do the math, 1 year, 1 day forward for every 128 years, so 11 minutes every year actually added up to something, roughly 10 days. So they decided it's very important for spring to begin on March 21st. Well, it was actually beginning something like March 31st. So they said, this is a big problem, we want the calendar to mean something significant. It's a little bit silly if we say March 21st is when spring begins, and now it's beginning March 31st, given another few hundred years, it's going to be beginning in April, and so on and so forth. So they said, we're going to make a better calendar. First steps first, we're going to just skip 10 days. And kachaya, the day after Thursday, October 4th, 1582, was Friday, October 15th. And that's how it was. Now, it didn't, you know, things didn't change overnight. I think different countries accepted it right away. My understanding is that the colonies in America didn't even necessarily accept it at first, but I think by the time that America became a country, they accepted the Gregorian calendar. Russia accepted it much later.
People revolted, I think, at the beginning.
Yeah, people, yeah. There was a lot of controversy over it. To this day, New York City alternate site parking even gives no street cleaning on certain East Orthodox holidays, which reflect the Julian calendar. So, and it's not just them, it's also the Jews, because the Jewish people still reflect the Julian calendar for V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. So now we have an understanding of what exactly is going on. So the Gregorian calendar is different in the sense that instead of assuming 365.25 days, it assumes 364.2425 days, which now, instead of falling a day ahead every 128 years, we're falling a day ahead every 3,200 years or something like that. And the way they do it is, instead of having a February 29th every 4 years, every 100th year, we don't have a February 29th to make it a little bit shorter, but every 400 years, we still do. So essentially, right, in a 400-year period, it used to be that there were 100 leap years. Now there are 97. Okay, so we took away 3 leap years. So that's significant, right? So in the year 1582, we skipped 10 days on the calendar. So let's say that Tikufat Tishrei used to be something like November 22nd or so. So the Gregorian calendar just said, we're actually just going to jump 10 days. So Shmuel / the Jewish people, the Doros, said, you're calling it, let's say, October 1st. Let's say for all intents and purposes, it went forward to October 4th, because that's really what it did, due to various shifts. You're calling it October 4th, but it's really, I still think, I'm following my own calendar, and I think that, I'm sorry, right, it's the reverse, because the Jews still are holding onto a calendar that's running too fast. So what we're saying is, you jumped 10 days ahead, which means that their vernal equinox is actually falling at the end of November, but Shmuel / we are saying, no, it's really falling on October 4th. And then in the year 1600, everything is the same, because there is a February 29th, but then in the years 1700, 1800, and 1900, the Gregorian calendar skips another February 29th that Shmuel / the Julian calendar still has, so we fall 3 more days forward. So now we're all the way up to October 7th. So I don't...
I'm going to take your word for it.
Okay, yeah, it's like sort of hard to wrap your head around, right? The idea being that...
I'm going to need a pen and paper for this, but okay.
Yeah, just the point being that, like, let's say on October 4th, 1582, we're all saying the same thing. Right. Then the Gregorian calendar the next day says today's actually October 15th. Right. And we're still saying, no, today's actually October 5th. Right. Which essentially means that we think that, right, we think that what they're essentially saying is the true day is actually 10 days ahead of what you're saying. So we're saying that, no, today is really the end of November something, but the Gregorian calendar is calling that October 7th because they've moved 13 days ahead of us. So from Shmuel's perspective / the Julian perspective, it's still anchored on the correct day in the end of November. But
they're just calling it a different day.
Right, we're calling it something else, and the Gregorian calendar knows that it actually, in fact, is more accurate, but we're following the same perpetual system of 91 and a half days and 7.5 hours that Shmuel instituted following the Julian calendar. And that's what we see on the chart here. Right? Let's say Monday, October 7th, 1996, just plugging and chugging from what Shmuel told us, the Tekufa is that evening at 3 a.m., so 59 days later is December 4th. And every single year, it winds up being on October 7th. And once every 4 years, though, which happens to be the year before Civil Leap Year, it'll always be at 9 p.m., according to Shmuel. So since it's at 9 p.m., we effectively consider it to be October 8th, and that's why Vitein Telematzer begins the evening of December 5th. But you can see that the ship, every 100 years, that's not divisible by 400, things are going to shift forward again. And you can see that in the year 2100, where in the year 2099, the Tekufa, we're still assuming, is October 7th, which gets you to starting it on December 5th. But then the next year, everything falls ahead, and now the Gregorian calendar added yet another day, meaning moved the day forward that the Julian calendar didn't. So now it's on October 8th, which means that now the Siddurim will have to say, you know, in most years say it on December 5th, but in a year preceding a civil leap year, say it on December 6th. And so on and so forth, where in 2200 it's going to start being December 6th and 7th, and in 16,000 years, we'll start saying it in April, and there'll be some Pesach, there'll be some years where Pesach is before Vitein Telematzer, and we're not going to be saying it at all. So, yeah, it's a bit of a problem. I've heard, I don't know if any major Rishon or Achron says this, that, oh, well, that proves that we're going to have a Sanhedrin by then. Okay. So, you know, essentially this is the only problem.
16,000 years?
Yeah.
Well, I freaking hope we have a Sanhedrin by then.
we're falling ahead at roughly one day every 128 years. So, just plugging in those numbers, we're going to be, the Siddur will say in the year 16,000 to, in the year, well, I guess 18,000 something, it'll say, you start saying Vitein Telematzer on April 1st or April 2nd before a civil leap year. And Pesach starts some years in March, so.
I don't think it'll be an issue.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the more classical sources, right? So the classical sources actually don't even really talk about this because even until Shulchan Aruch, it wasn't an issue. Modern Achronim certainly are aware of this. There isn't much of a nafkamina. Right now we're 13 days ahead of where it should be, and you know, okay, new. So, and the reason why I say new is that it actually, that's like the more technical, like mathematically challenging to understand, but it's actually the smaller problem when it comes to Vitein Telematzer Livracha. So if you got it, you got it. If you didn't, you didn't. So this brings us to section number 3. So Vitein Telematzer in Bavel and beyond. Vitein Telematzer, as we said, we're davening for rain. We're saying, Hashem, please give us rain. That's fine and good for Bavel, which presumably starts davening for rain something like either December 4th or 5th, which really is the end of November, right? That's when their crops need rain, and they don't need rain anymore at the end of Pesach. So not everywhere on planet Earth has the same climate. So what do we do about that? This question isn't even a modern question. It begins in the Gemara itself. So let's go to the bottom of page number 2. Now we're going to be moving at a bit of a faster pace now, because there are a lot of sources, but they go somewhat quickly. So the Gemara in Tanit says, Shalchu le b'nei Ninveh l'Rebbe, the Jewish people of Ninveh. Apparently there is some academic discourse on whether this actually is Ninveh, because first of all, it's unclear that Jews did live in Ninveh during the time of Rebbe. Second of all, it's not that far from Bumbadisa, Naharda, etc. So we'll see that they wind up essentially saying we have a different climate than Bavel and Ninveh. So some people say it might be Naveh, which is a city in Syria close to the Golan. Whatever it is, they clearly have a different climate than Bavel. And they say, Kegon Anan, Da'afilu B'tzkufa Tamuz Ba'inan Mitra Hechinavid. In places like where we live, for people like us, who even in Tkufa Tammuz during the summer need rain, what do? Ki yichidin daminan o kirabin daminan. Do we act like yichidim or do we act like rabim? Ki yichidin daminan uvi shemeya tefila o kirabim daminan uvi rechat hashanim. Do we act like yichidim, who apparently, and we'll see the next source in about Azara, that says that this is what in fact you do. If you have a personal request that you need to add, add it in Shema Tfila. Or, Okarabim Daminan Uvir Chadashanim, maybe we act like a community, and if a community, a bona fide real community, and again, Rambam and how people interpret Rambam, there are different ways of understanding this, but they're saying maybe if we're considered like Rabim, we should just add in Birkat Hashanim. So Shalach Luhu, Ki Yechidim Damitu V'Shomea Tefila. You should act like Yechidim and you should say it in Shomea Tefila. We could turn to page 3. There's a Meitve, bringing up an inconsistent Tanaitic source just for the sake of time. We could brush through it for now. V'Hilchasa, the conclusion of the Gemara went to being B'Shomea Tefila, that you should say it in Shomea Tefila. And you could see in the next source from Gemara and Avodah Zarah, the above conclusion follows what the Gemara says here, that Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha Shoel Adam Srecha B'Shomea Tefila. When a Yachid needs to ask for anything, you say it in Shomea Tefila. If you need to ask for specifically Refua, you say it in Rifayinu. If you need to ask for Parnasa, you could add it in Birchat Hashanim. Okay, now there are different ways that we can understand what Rebbe said. Now there's a Gemara that the same story appears in the Yerushalmi also in two places. It's essentially the same thing. For the sake of time, we don't have to read it all inside. But Rebbe Benin Veit Surchan the Meyaved Taane Batar Pischa.
It's a different. So here it's the Naveh.
Here, right. Well, yeah, also, this is from Sepharia, so.
Oh, might just be a typo.
It could be a typo. It also could be someone specifically writing that because he thought it was Naveh. So I don't know. I didn't go to the manuscripts. I mean, another thing that I noted is that they ask the same question to Rebbe, right? They say that they needed rain after Pesach, and then he sent back, L'chuvasu bilvad shelo tishanu, and then what's the phrase? So here in Yerushalmi Tanit, it says, mi tiv'a shelitfila, or sheltfila, right? Don't distinguish from the form of the prayer. But the Gemara in Yerushalmi Brachot says, matbeya sheltfila, also kind of the same idea, coin or form.
Formula, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same idea. The point being that, and then lahalacha, there winds up being somewhat of a machloket Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Rabbi Yossi, but it comes to the same conclusion that you should say it in Shomea Tefila. So, right, these presumably, right, the Bavli and Yerushalmi presumably come from the same actual story. There was a community somewhere that needed rain even in the summer, and Rabbi told them you should say it in Shomea Tefila. And at least in the Yerushalmi, he justifies it based on Tiva Shelit Tefila. So the Rishonim essentially wind up reading this in one of two ways, right? One could be that fundamentally Nineveh, let's call them Nineveh, really should be saying that they need rain. They should be davening for rain, but the problem is they're too small a community. They're lahalacha, they have the status of yechidim. The other possibility is that there actually is, in principle, perhaps, real reason to say that they should say v'tein talamater livracha, but this tiva sheli tefila value might reflect that there's something called Jewish unity, where halacha should be consistent all the way across Jewish communities. And this is reflected succinctly in Rashi on this Gemara in Tanit. Again, I read, there's an article by last year that I read on this in AJS, where apparently we know that this actually isn't Rashi, it's one of the Masechtas where it isn't actually Rashi. It doesn't really make a difference because Tosfos and all the Rishonim quote this Rashi, and the point is one and the same. And Rashi here says on this Gemara, "Ubivavel begola mitoch she'en antrichin ligeshamim ein shualin ad samach l'tkufa tishrei." Right in Bavel, we start saying "B'tein talamatar 60 days after the tkufa" in the key language, "V'chein anu nohagin shekol min hagenu achar b'nei Bavel." Right, so this perhaps is the value that Rebbe is conveying to the people of Nineveh. All of our minhagim follow Bavel. There's something to that, right? On the one, and this is something that we're going to see tracing through the Rishonim. On the one hand, there might be what we can call being logical, right? Tefila is supposed to reflect an actual need, and you should daven for something that you need. You should not daven for something that you don't need. On the other hand, there's something called Jewish unity, where we should all be saying the same tefila, right? Tefila is an extremely important part of who we are. And if we distinguish too much, then, you know, we consider that to be a loss. Reflected till today, we're still saying 1,000 years after the last Jews left Bavel, Yom Kippur on every single Shabbos. So, there isn't much written on it, but it seems that during the Gaonic period, after the closing of the Gemara, most communities were following the Minhag of Bavel, starting 60 days after the autumn began, except for possibly a Jewish community in Tunisia. But the Jewish communities in Bavel itself, and also France, Germany, Italy, and Spain, they all followed Bavel, except for one notable exception that we'll get to. And this is reflected in one of the first post-Gaonic sources in the Rif. The Rif, in his presentation of the Gemara, what he shows only lahalacha, in Tanit, he writes, right, Amar Rabbi Elazar, halacha karam gamliel, Tanya chananyo meru vagola ad shishin bitkufa. That's the Bavel opinion, and then he quotes on Daf Hey, his Daf Hey, the Ninveh asking Rebbe story, and he winds up saying what Rebbe answered to them, and he writes Bechein Halacha. So Rif unequivocally says that the halacha, the correct halacha is to say it 60 days after the Tekufa. Rambam is somewhat less clear and seemingly contradictory, which creates for good Torah, but also more question marks. And this contradiction comes up between his Perush HaMishnayot and his Mishnah Torah. So his Perush HaMishnayot, which he wrote earlier, he writes as follows, and this is on the Mishnah in Tanit. Aval b'shar ha'aratzot ha'she'ela b'zman she'hamatar tov v'hagon be'oto ha'makom v'natano oto hazman ki'ilu hu shiva v'marcheshvan. Right? So in other places, not in Israel, you should daven for rain when you actually need rain, as if it were, you know, the analogous situation to Zayin Cheshvan. Skipping ahead, right, the second to last line, Veheach yishalu anshei zeh hamakom geshem b'mar Cheshvan, halu zet min ha-sheker v'ha-yivelet v'chol zeh davar amiti v'galoi. Right, he's saying, like, how could you possibly daven for rain if you don't actually need rain? Doesn't make any sense. So, again, unclear what exactly he means here, but it seems like he's saying that you shouldn't daven for rain if you don't need rain. You should daven for rain if you do need rain, but that's not what he says in Mishneh Torah. In Mishneh Torah, Hilchot Tefillah, he says, you know, plain and simply, what the Gemara says, right? Halacha Tetzayin, that in Israel they start saying it on the 7th of Cheshvan, but in Shinar and Surya and Mitzrayim and Mikomot Hasmucho Le'ilu, they should start saying it Shishim Achar Tkufa Tishrei. And then Halacha Yud Zayin, places that are far away, he doesn't mention Ninveh, but clearly, based on that story, Shoalim et Agishamim, this is Halacha Yud Zayin, bottom of page 3, Shoalim et Agishamim be'et shehen shrichin lahen b'shomei atfilah. So that, you know, Rambam seems to be somewhat contradicting himself. Now again, it's possible that Rambam on the Mishnah is just explaining the Mishnah, but his fundamental conclusion is what he presents in Mishnah Torah. So later Rishonim will interpret Rambam in various ways. We have the Ritva, for example, right? So the Ritva, now we're already moving forward into the 1200s, post-Rambam. He was living in Spain, and he, you know, as I mentioned, most Jewish communities at this point were, in fact, following the Bavel practice to say it Shishim B'Tkufa. Ritva, very interestingly, he writes that we basically should follow the opinion of the Rif, right? What he writes, Biru Hagaonim Zal, Zman D'Vchol Makom Yipnei Gimel Inyanim. He basically gives three reasons why we should follow the Bavel opinion, right? Hayacham, Yipnei She'anu, Nigra, Rin, Achareim, B'chol Inyanenu. We follow Bavel. That's just what we do. V'habet, She'tehei, Din Echad, Kol Hagola, Kipashta, Deshas, Demimra. Okay, and the Galut, we should follow what the Gemara says, plain and simple. V'hagimol, She'ha She'ela la'altar, Mechazeke, L'perot, Hasada, V'ein Sibor, Sholin, Davar, She'eno, Tzarech, Lahem. This, and he actually brings in some realia here. He thinks that at least in Spain, or, you know, possibly nearby areas that he could have had in mind, maybe there actually is a reason why it doesn't make sense to start davening for rain right after Shmini Atzeret. And again, I cut out significantly from the Ritva, but what he winds up getting to essentially is it's very clear from Ritva that he thinks the quote unquote true conclusion would be to either start saying V'tein Talumatar right after Shmini Atzeret or 60 days after the equinox. And he writes, and right after the three dots, V'gamze bevadai min ha'yafeb shita nechona. Right, he points to certain communities, specifically in Provence, in the south of France, that actually were starting to daven for rain after Shmini Atzeret. And he says that actually makes sense. Ela she'en l'shenot zo mipnei haminhag shehu k'derech hagaon himself. He says that, right, he basically spells out the value, right, that reluctantly, sometimes we have to put up our hands and say that uniformity in halacha has to outweigh being, you know, correct, logical, meteorologically consistent, so to speak. But not every Rishon came to this conclusion. So the Meiri, at the bottom of page 3, is one notable exception. You know, contemporary of the Ritva in... I think he was in northern Spain, but he was running that area. He was like either on the border of Spain or in Provence. But he writes and is, you know, dealing with the Provence community that they in fact were davening for rain starting right after Shmini Atzeret, and he wrote this is a good thing, v'chein haminhag, and he endorsed it. So the Meiri is one major Rishon who endorses a community that in fact was saying mashiv haruach at a date different from everyone else in Chutz La'aretz. The second major Rishon to try to come to this conclusion, at least, is the Rush, and this is at the top of page 4. We're not going to read it all inside due to the sake of time. The Rush, contemporary of the Meiri, and you can see I bolded, so it starts, Vayihi bishnat chameshet alafim v'shivim v'sholosh l'vriyat ha'olam, writing in biblical prose in the year 1313 CE, There was a famine in Spain, and he said, "I'm finally gonna do it. Here's my chance." Now, again, I'm gonna summarize this outside. It's what I presented here on the Daf Makorot is itself less than half of the tshuva that the Rush actually writes. He goes on a long, long explanation of his reading of the Rambam. He thinks that there actually is something to the plain reading of Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayot. He thinks that Rambam probably thinks that it's only places like Nineveh that are small communities closer to Yechidim who can't say V'tein Tal Lumato Levracha, different from the whole entire world. But, right, so he goes on a whole journey. I think at the beginning of his life he lived in Ashkenaz in Germany. And he writes, you can see I bolded Ba'ashkenaz, right? Mikvar Yamim Rabim Ba'ashkenaz. He writes about, I saw like this major problem that they were following the Bavel community, but they really needed rain all the way past Pesach until Shavuot, and he tried to get them to change it, and he couldn't do it. The Jews there just didn't want to change what they were doing. And then he eventually went, you see the next bolt, to Provencia, Shamati be Montpichier. He was in the city of Montpellier. I'm sure a French person would pronounce that differently. That they also were... You know, on the one hand, he said, apparently, you know, this is that's the Jews of Provence. So they were starting to say it very shortly after Sukkot, and he said, okay, good. But they were stopping to say it on Pesach, even though they still needed rain after that. And he said, no, you guys got it half right. What are you doing? Like, just keep say V'tein Tal Lumato Levracha when you need it. And they said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to change our minhag. And he says, V'yatzati misham v'lo yadati ma hiskimu laso. So I don't, okay. I lost in Germany, not sure what happened in Provence. Ubevoi hena, now I'm in Spain, right? That's where the Rush wound up at the end of his life. And he said, they're doing it completely wrong. They're following Bavel, doesn't make any sense. They need rain, not exactly when Bavel does. And he said, okay, now it's the year 1313, there's a major drought, now is the time, if we don't daven for rain, like, what are we doing, guys? And he lost. He lost again. And what did the Rush do? He wound up saying that, okay, what can I do? And this is after the final ellipses, four lines from the bottom of the Rush. Ubir oti ki hitu et lev hakahal levilti ki kabel mimeni, kevan shetzorech rabim hu, right? I saw that. I skipped a line. Divrei Elohim Chaim, right? He's calling it Divrei Elohim Chaim. You know, the words of Hashem are that you should daven for rain when you need it, but they didn't accept it. Gam ani chazarti bi milishol leskir bebeit hakneset shani met halel bo. Even I, in my own shul, I stopped davening v'tein tal lumato levracha when I really should, etc., etc. Mikol makom lo ratziti la'asot agudot agudot. Okay, so he threw up his hands, right? He really tried. You read through this tshuva; it's very long. You see that he really tried. This was a campaign lasting decades in one community after the next, and he lost. The Jewish people decided, so to speak, and he lost. So you know, he lost so much that in the next Makor, the Tor, the son, rules against his father. He says, we follow B'nai Bavel. We start saying B'nai Talamatar on Shishim Litzkufa. The Beit Yosef, Rav Yosef Cairo, writes explicitly, Lufia Nia Daiti, Haya Nira, Shekevan Shelo Nitkablu Divrei Harash, V'chol Ha'olam, Lo Nahagu Kein. Right, Shulchan Aruch is explicitly spelling out, there's something to Jewish practice, and Jewish practice rejected the Rush, so Have Le Sugyan Da'alma Lo Ke Harash. So that essentially shows that we don't follow the Rush. And Shulchan Aruch in, you know, the Beit Yosef in the Shulchan Aruch itself spells out definitively that we start saying it 60 days after the Tkufa, and I bolded it, B'chutz al Haaretz, right? And again, we started this discussion with the word Gola, as the Gemara describes it. Shulchan Aruch tells us, you know, for all intents and purposes, what this means is B'chutz al Haaretz. In B'chutz al Haaretz, we should say it 60 days after the Tkufa, which, you know, today means December 4th or 5th. And again, there were dissenting voices here and there. The Ran, Al-Harif, goes through a long discourse where he also is very sympathetic to the Rush, but says for similar reasons not to follow the Rush. But as time went on, it essentially became more and more cemented to really just follow the Bavel Shita. We see the Bach on the Torah writes in, 1600s, that you should follow the Shita of Bavel, and I'm just including a line that he writes, V'shamati sheshnei gedolim asu ma'aseh kishahaya atzirat geshamim b'imot achama. He says there were two people who, there was a drought in the summer, so they said, okay, we're going to say V'tein Talumatar.
In Shema Yatzvila.
Right, even in Shema Yatzvila, not even in Bari Chalenu, V'ne Asaf Kol Echad La'am Av Be'ot Hashana. And they died that year. V'talu Hadavar, etc., etc. So, again, Tamar actually asked Rabbi Ezra Schwartz about you today, what do you make of statements like that from major post-game? On the one hand, I don't know what to make of it, but it suggests that really don't do it.
It's like Berachas Kohen and the Vilna Gaon.
I'm not familiar.
So, the Vilna Gaon was argued that we should be like the Sephardim and to do Berachas Kohen every day. And he, tried to institute it. And then, the shul in Vilna started burning. There was, a fire that happened in Vilna. And he's okay, I'm not doing this anymore.
Well.
I don't know. Some Rabbanim over the years, whenever you try to flout convention and then people start dying or property starts burning down.
Interesting.
Take it seriously.
Yeah. I mean, again, presumably if people were doing the right thing and then died, you wouldn't make much, but yeah. All right. The Bach wrote it. Right, and, there are more polemics than that. The Aruch HaShulchan, we're already in the 1800s by now, similarly says that we should say it 60 days after the Tkufa, and he writes in bold, right, Katav Harash Baatzmo Shelo Nitzkablu Dvarav Klal Ayin Sham V'Ki'ilu Yatza Bat Kol Asot Kifnei Bavel. Right, it's as if a Bat Kol came out and said the Rush might be right, so to speak, but we're not going to follow him. And he also writes V'Chol HaMepakbek Bazeh Ra'oy La'Onesh. Right, anyone who does what the Rush said to do is Ra'oy La'Onesh. And interestingly, the Lasker article points this out that right, the Aruch HaShul Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein in Germany in the 1800s was a contemporary of Abraham Geiger, other reformists, and they apparently, in fact, created a new sitter. Germany needs rain all year round, and they said, okay, so we're going to say Mashiv Haruach and Vitein Talamatar all year round. So it's possible that the Aruch HaShulchan is using this language in response to them. You know, so they say. Not the craziest thing. Mishnah Brura paskins the same way, Igros Moshe paskins the same way. So, for all intents and purposes, that is where the discussion ends. I just want to conclude with a little cute wrinkle, which is half of our planet, or I think even though it's half of our planet, it's only 30% of land and maybe 10% of people, but, several hundred million people living in the southern hemisphere, not only do they have potentially different rainy seasons from Bavel, it's completely inverted, right? If you're in the southern hemisphere, not only, the months of September through March are spring and summer. So you're davening for rain in what potentially is the summer season.
Would be a bigger issue with Pesach.
So it could be an issue with Pesach, but again, the Jewish calendar for everything aside from Matan Talmud Matar Levracha and Birchat Hachama just follows the Jewish calendar. So it's light outside on Hanukkah and it's autumn during Pesach, but, so be it. But they're saying, okay, V'tein Talamatzer Levracha, this is a problem. And this wound up coming to the forefront in Brazil. So, just very quickly, again, I see We're already at 45 minutes. So just to wrap things up, right? It seems that the Jews who came to North America were European. They were European, and it seems that they followed just what their forefathers did, and they davened v'tein talumato like everyone else. Jews got to Recife, Brazil, south of the equator, in 1637, and very shortly afterwards they sent a shaila back to Europe, and to our knowledge, this is actually the first halachic shaila from the New World. Writing to Rav Chaim Shabtai in the 1640s, he was a gadol in Salonika, Greece, congregation Tzur Yisrael asked, "We are in Brazil, and what the rest of the world calls winter is our summer, and it doesn't make sense to daven for rain. So what should we do?" And this congregation, by the way, you might be familiar with the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue in the Upper East Side. So that's that. So these are this is the community of Jews who eventually became Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik in this community. So they asked this question, and he wrote this whole shaila. This is at the bottom of page 5. Right, Shalchu mitam me'aretz rechoka, mi'malchut Brazil, etc., etc. It's on Mehakav HaShavel Lesad Arom, south of the equator. And he walks through all the Makoro that we just saw tonight. He goes through the different readings of the Rambam, he goes through the Rush and his whole journey. And he essentially comes to the conclusion, Klal HaDvarim, at the end that I bolded, where he essentially says that the Jews of the Southern Hemisphere should never say V'tein Talum Matar Levracha, they should never say Mashiv HaRuach, but during their winter, if they want, they could daven for rain during Shomei HaTfilah. And I just want to conclude outside
Was that accepted by the Spanish-Portuguese community?
So, yes, so they accepted it. The Jews of Buenos Aires, Argentina, accepted that. And I'm just going to just summarize this outside. An interesting series of events wound up happening actually in Australia, where Jews got to Australia in the 1700s, I think maybe early 1800s. The first chief rabbi at that time, Rabbi Solomon Herschel, chief rabbi of the British Empire, instructed Jews getting to Australia, I think some of whom were even possibly convicts. Those were some amongst the first people to go to Australia. He told them, based on this tshuva in Sefer Torah Chaim of Rabbi Chaim Shabtai, he said, never say Mashiv HaRuach, and never say V'tein Talum Matar in Birchat Hashanim. His successor, Rabbi Nathan Adler, the next chief rabbi, said the same thing to the Jews of Hobart, Australia, in 1846 when they asked. And then came Rabbi Abraham Eber Hershowitz. He was a Russian-born rabbi, lived from 1840 to 1924. He lived in Australia for 4 years in the 1890s, and he was apparently a colorful and somewhat controversial person. Supposedly, the first time he came to Melbourne, there was nearly a riot. So I don't know so much about him, but he writes a tshuva, and he decided that no, this is completely incorrect. What Rav Shabtai said centuries ago, Australian Jews really should follow the Bavel custom, right? Jews of Chutz La'aretz are uniform, and they should follow the Bavel custom. He went on a big campaign. He set up his own shul where they actually did say V'tein Talum Matar Levracha starting on December whatever. I guess December 4th or 5th. No, actually, no, it was the 1800s, so at the time it would have been 3rd or 4th. Hmm. He even told his congregants, don't daven with anyone or even answer amen to people who disagree with us. he reached out to several gedolim, including Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, who agreed with him. But others who disagreed with him, but he actually lost, and he wound up not convincing anyone outside of his shul in Melbourne, and he actually left after 4 years to America. And the Lasker article points this out, and this is just an interesting historical irony, that, right, on the one hand, the Rush and Rav Hershowitz in Australia are doing very opposite things, right? The Rush wanted to abolish the local custom because he saw that they're following Jewish uniformity, but they're misreading tradition, right? The Rush said, I'm going to try to get the people in, you know, Germany and Provence and Spain. I think that they should follow logic and meteorological fact. And he lost. And then Rav Hershowitz in Australia is doing exactly the opposite, right? He also has a community that he thinks is doing the wrong thing. But what he thinks is the wrong thing this time is they're being logical, right? They're following a psak that says, daven for rain when you actually need it. And he says, no, Jewish uniformity is the more important thing. Both of them found themselves at odds with the communities that they were in. The Rush decided to acquiesce and give in. Hershowitz decided to go to America. So, different approaches. Hershowitz, in a certain sense, lost. In another sense, he actually, you know, won the war, because at posthumously after his lifetime, the chief rabbi of Australia, Rabbi Israel Parrish, he was there post-Holocaust through the 70s, he adopted the Buffel practice, and to this day, Sarah Crystal informs me that Melbourne and most of Australia says what we say, I have a cousin who married a woman, Chaya Sara, from Argentina. She told me that I think at least the Ashkenazim there say V'tein Talamater when we do. So, you know, Kachaya, the Buffel practice has become dominant. And one final wrinkle I'll let you explore at your own time is the appendix that I included on Dape Mikoro, which, you know, shows us what, in fact, the climate actually is in all the places that we talked about today. And what's interesting is that, right, the Jews of Recife in Brazil are the ones who ask the question, saying, it doesn't make sense for us to daven for rain starting in December, because that's actually our summer, not our winter. If you look on the rain chart, they actually do have rain in December through May. They have less rain, but they have rain, right? It's a very rainy climate. So unclear, right? There are different suggestions about what exactly was going on. It's possible that they didn't necessarily have the same climate data that we do, and, you know, the most observable phenomenon was that it's the summer, not the winter, and it's possible that they just didn't necessarily know how much rain they needed. But it's interesting to read through these, right? You could look at, you know...
I don't know if they grew stuff there, and so...
Right.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yes. That was amazing.
Sure, yeah. No, that's basically it. Yeah, what were you saying?
So I don't know. I mean, if they didn't grow things there, then they didn't have... Then they didn't know, okay, when do I need rain, when do I not need rain? So then they just... Their default position was, oh, okay, we... You know, it's summer, so we don't need rain.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be that.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you see on page 7, right, Montpellier, the city that the Rush wound up being in France, you see that, right, they were saying, like, no, we're not going to start davening for rain until December. But the Rush was right meteorologically, right? If you look on the rain chart, like, rain really picks up in September. And he was saying, come on, guys, like, this is when we need rain. Let's do it. You know, Toledo in Spain, where he probably wound up, is something similar. I put it in Jerusalem. Page 8, I put on Ramadi, which is a city in Iraq, right near Fallujah, which is Pumbedisa. So right there, you can see that they barely get any rain, but they do get some rain starting on, you know, roughly November, December. So that's, you know, Shishin B'Tkufa. Mosul is Nineveh. So, right, Mosul, they get more rain than Bavel does, but it basically is the same as Bavel. So that's, you know, as I mentioned, that's, you know, partly what motivates saying that maybe it's not Nineveh, maybe it's Naveh, which is the next chart that I put on, the problem being also kind of a similar pattern I put on New York. Okay, that's really it. I don't know, any comments or questions? Close it there.
This is great. What was the Lasker? Did you go to Lasker?
Yeah, I have it here. Arnold and Daniel Lasker, who I assume are either siblings or father and son, wrote an article on V'tein Talamatar for AJS Review in 1984. Comprehensive, 30-plus pages, goes through, you know, has like 100-plus footnotes, goes through, you know, everything that's ever been said on the topic, essentially. So definitely worth checking out. And again, as I mentioned, like, the discussion in Gemara Rishonim Achronim winds up focusing on the question of when you need rain, but not on the question of, well, the Julian / Shmuel calendar is drifting off. So, okay. So it is. All right, blender.